It is time now for History Matters with the one and only Scott Washington, a local historian and expert on all things history, past, present, and future.
I don't know. That house sounds pretty good.
Oh, my God.
Are we going to have a drawing for that? Or
No, it's just straight up for sale.
I mean,
if you
amazing.
If you got $2.25 million, you can buy this house. Although the maintenance would be ridiculous. Like,
yes.
It's this sprawling, huge eight-bedroom
right.
house. On, I think it comes with its own park.
Oh, really?
So this isn't the sort of thing that you would give someone as a gift
yeah.
unless you want to bankrupt
yeah,
them
exactly.
in some way, shape, or form. But, anyway, how are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, though. I think we do have to extend a word of sympathy to the folks down in Florida
mm-hmm.
at Stoneman Douglas High School, and certainly sympathy to those families and prayers for all of them. You know, and it made me think again because of our knowledge of history and the Second Amendment. We always hear about this, but you know, the Second Amendment, what was it like back in the 18th century?
What kind of
weapons did people have back then?
Well, they had muskets and
muskets.
Single fire shots.
That's right.
I'm not even looking back at the history of the Second Amendment to say, oh, well, it applied in this way in 1790 and it doesn't apply in the same way today. I think it does apply in the same way today, even
yes.
with the changes in technology. The thing is that we've gotten it into our heads that the Second Amendment guarantees this right without any limitations whatsoever.
Right.
And the thing to know about the Constitution is there's no such thing as an unlimited right in the
right.
Constitution. You have the right to free speech until you shout fire in a crowded theater. You have the right to freedom of the press until
insight.
You
yeah.
commit libel against someone. You have the right to freedom of religion until you decide your religion promotes human sacrifice.
Right.
And we take all of these things for granted. You have the right to bear arms. You don't have the right to bear nuclear arms. And I think we're all on board with that.
Yes.
So it's not a question of is the right limited or not. It is limited.
Right.
It's
it
a
is.
Question of degree.
That's right. And
yeah.
also we've always had gun control. It's astonishingly
yes.
enough, you cannot go buy a bazooka, a tank.
Right.
I was going to say flamethrower, but apparently you can buy those. Those are not
you can
regulated.
Buy those, yeah.
But we do have
I think Elon Musk is selling them
yes.
now, isn't he?
So we have,
yeah.
we have actual regulations that are mm-hmm. out there. And these AK semi-automatic
AR-15s,
weapons that keep
yeah.
being used, these are military-grade weapons that really have no place hunting deer
yeah.
or producing this kind of terror. So
there's a lot of arguments with regard to the gun control debate that don't actually make any sense. And
yeah.
everyone's guilty of this. Everyone on both sides of the gun control debate talk about it as if we're in the midst of some kind of huge crime wave.
Right.
Historically, we're not. Crime
right.
has dropped considerably
yeah.
in the last 50 years. We're safer now. I think the crime rate is almost is about half what it was in 1990. So in that context is what we're having this debate. But the argument about we need the Second Amendment as this sort of bastion of
right.
liberty against a tyrannical government, that may well have been true
yeah.
in 1790 when the Constitution
right.
was written. It certainly is not true today because
right.
the military and law enforcement in America have way stronger weapons than any one
right.
individual person with their arsenal
right.
is going to have, no matter how large an arsenal that is. And that is thanks in part to the strong advocacy
mm-hmm.
in favor of the military and law enforcement by the very
right.
people who are now turning
exactly.
around and saying we need guns as a bastion against tyranny.
Well,
that's out the window.
I think
now.
If anything, we're proving that these kind of weapons should not be in the hands of civilians.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we're showing time after time. I don't know how many more times we have to prove that.
Yeah.
But this week in history, that's what this does. This gets us all to look at the headlines and then look back and say, what's going on? What's happening? And is there a relationship that we can
mm-hmm.
Look at?
And how do we understand this debate in a
right.
larger kind of
that's
historical
right. that's
context?
Exactly
like, 'cause
right.
this moment isn't taking place in a vacuum.
No.
We understand this in the context of a couple hundred years of history.
That's right. And when people go off to war, they come back, they turn
mm-hmm.
in their weapons. This is just normal.
Go to towns in the Wild West and you have
yes.
to turn in your guns.
Yes,
at the
exactly.
North.
I think there
which
was a
which we probably should not have.
That's
but
right.
Like,
well,
that's
what Wyatt Earp was doing,
yeah,
you know, saying,
yeah.
hey, will you turn in? Because people finally said, no, not enough of this. kind of shooting.
That one may actually have been a Second Amendment violation. but then this was back in an age when the Supreme Court wasn't so active in upholding constitutional provisions. And yet in those, but still worth noting that in that period, that was something that was done without even anyone thinking about it, which is bizarre now, but
well,
so it goes.
Well, and it's not to be a downer about any of this stuff, but it's just to say this is part of what we're dealing with. And some weeks we look at the history, and sometimes the history is happening right in front of our faces.
Mm-hmm.
And 100 years, 20 years from now, people are going to be asking, what were you doing? What were you thinking? What were you saying?
Yeah.
And so these kind of conversations, thoughtful conversations, need to be taking place to decide what kind of a society we want to have and what kind of values guide us.
And I think that's a really important point, too, because it's not just with regard to the gun control debate, and it's not just with regard to this moment in history. I don't think there has ever been, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I don't think there's ever been a year that you can point to in American history where people living in that year didn't look back 20 years ago and think, my God, what were we thinking? Our opinions change, our perspectives change, reality changes, and our minds change on various issues as that's taking place. And what that means is 20 years from now, we're going to be looking back on ourselves today and saying, my God, what were we thinking?
Exactly.
So it kind of behooves us to reflect in the mirror every so often and think, what actually are the justifications and what are the rationalizations that I'm coming up with for the arguments that I think I believe? Do they hold water?
That's right. And it's also so important to realize that sometimes we can feel hopeless in the light of this,
mm-hmm.
and yet there are people every day in a nation of 300 million people that are doing wonderful things in their communities for their neighbors. We don't always report them. They're not the aberrations, but that is more the norm than what we're hearing, and we need to know that. And history is, and every week we point up people, individuals who stood up for unusual things. Susan Anthony, Susan B. Anthony, the great women's rights leader.
Today is her birthday,
right? That's right. Yes, which is just a wonderful thing to think about. And you know, she was also a vigorous opponent of slavery. She was born in 1852, and actually she and Elizabeth Cady Stanton collected 400,000 signatures on petitions to abolish slavery. Now, that's
when did they do that?
This is in what I've got here is 1863, so in the middle of the Civil War, Gettysburg. They're collecting these, saying we should abolish slavery.
When was Susan B. Anthony born?
She was born in, I want to say,
You said 1852. She wasn't 11 when she did that.
That's right. No, 1820.
That makes more sense. I'm like, she got started young and did a lot. Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
1852 is when she started to express her interest in voting and saying, why aren't we allowed to do this? So she becomes an amazing person, an amazing woman, a leader in society after the Civil War, and of course, as a strong proponent of women's suffrage, the legal right of women to vote. She dies in 1906 before that right is actually enshrined. But I think it's a wonderful testimony of somebody seeing something that was wrong and saying, we can do better. And that's what I think gives me encouragement in these moments when we are in such national anguish about what's going on, saying there are people doing things that are changing the world for the better.
Yep, there's those people that are out there all the time, and things are changing. As much as we feel hopelessness and despair about issues where the conversation never seems to move, the conversation actually is moving. It just moves kind of slowly and imperceptibly if you look at it day by day by day. But if you look at it year by year or decade by decade, things do move, and that's the case with Susan B. Anthony. 1875, she was way out there on the fringes. By the time she dies, a generation later, there's a really strong movement, and then that movement ends up getting enshrined in a constitutional amendment 15 years after that.
And we're the beneficiaries of such amazing women leaders in all strata of society now. And I think that's just a testimony to her vision and so many others who stood up and said, we need to change. We can do better. Mm. I think of some other interesting people on the Wednesday, the 14th. That's Valentine's Day. And there are some interesting people here. Carl Bernstein is born. Now, he's with the Watergate mm-hmm. folks, but, you know, reporting, bringing things to light, that was a big deal. There's another person here.
What's with this was, Scott?
Okay, that's right.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. Well, another one is a person whose name we probably don't know, Christopher Latham Sholes, an American inventor who invented the first commercially successful typewriter.
Oh.
Now, you think of that and go, oh, my gosh, we're using keyboards and so on. Well, it's all thanks to him. He's the guy who created the QWERTY keyboard.
Ah, gotcha.
Which I think is kind of an amazing thing. Now, here's something fun. George Washington Gale Ferris. Now, that name, George Washington, is that a... Well, he took it a little different way. He's the inventor of the Ferris wheel.
Ferris wheel.
So if you go to any fair and you go, oh, my gosh, this is so much fun. Well, he's a person who looked at something and said, gee, why don't we have something going round and round way up in the air, stopping occasionally. Or, you know, here's something else. The February 13th, 1635, the first public school in America opens, the Boston Latin School. Mm-hmm. And you think of the difference that public schools have made and continue to make, shaping our communities, shaping the lives of our young people and in so many ways our families. This is the fabric that makes it so exciting to say there are people who said, let's do something different. And I think there was one fella who has a distinction. Well, I would say there's. Well, let's talk about Abraham Lincoln. He has a birthday
okay,
this
good.
Week.
Oh, yes, yes.
1809. And, you know, what a difference this person made.
Well, the two people born on the same day in 1809, because you've got Abraham Lincoln born on February 12th, 1809, yeah. Charles Darwin, same
That's
day.
That's right. That's
same
right.
day, same year.
That's amazing.
So
yes.
there's a significant day in
oh,
history,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, how they have changed our perspective mm-hmm. about the world and yep. about what
in
should
very,
be.
In very, very different ways,
oh,
right?
Tremendous, yeah. tremendous. Now, I did not realize, and I was remiss about this until I was researching this, that Black History Month has its origin because in the early 20th century, African-American communities were annually celebrating Lincoln's birthday mm-hmm. in conjunction with the birthday of abolitionist Frederick Douglass on February 14th. Mm-hmm. And that becomes then the Black History Week and then eventually Black History Month. I mean, that's a tremendous thing that I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great thing that we can celebrate.
And the NAACP was founded this week
yes.
in history too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
I don't know. This could not possibly have been a coincidence on the 100th anniversary of Lincoln's birthday.
Right.
1909,
right?
February 12th. Yeah.
That's the things we discover when we're mm-hmm. looking at this and looking at this realm of history, what's in the headlines, and then what's happening in other era and other times, and we go, oh. 1897, I'm looking at the February 17th, 1897, mm-hmm. The PTA is founded, the National Congress of Mothers. That's what it was named at first. But, you know, the PTAs are pretty basic
yeah, yeah.
and very important.
I wonder if the National Congress of Mothers, I wonder if that was, the story of the March of Dimes, which
yes.
starts as this organization, what is it, raising funds for
right.
a polio vaccine, right,
exactly,
or something like
yes.
that, and then they discover the polio vaccine, and they say, well, I guess that's the end of the March of Dimes, and people say, no, we can reorganize and
right.
continue raising funds for other causes. I wonder if it's the same with the National Congress of Mothers, if that was a public education organization at
yes.
first, or if it existed for a different reason and then changed into something
changed.
Else.
Well, that's a good question.
I raised this question. I have absolutely no idea
well,
of the
when
answer.
Well, when you brought up, and I sometimes say, when people say, what is this show? I said, well, it's kind of a jazz riff on history. So when you just raised about the March of Dimes, I was thinking about FDR. And mm-hmm. now here's a person who has, you know, everything going for him, and then he hits adversity. He has polio. And he goes to Hot Springs. He's there talking with ordinary people and becomes an inspiration. But it tempers who he is and how mm-hmm. different a person facing adversity and wearing the iron braces he had, but not complaining about it. And people knew, I think, in a general way, it was the news media didn't do a lot to lift that up, but everyone was aware in general. But I mean, there's a person, another person making a difference and saying we can do better in our society. So this is the other side of all this.
Yeah,
is that for these terrible, heinous crimes that occur, there are people that are doing interesting, unusual things. Sometimes they're fun, like a Ferris wheel. Sometimes they're more significant, like standing up for women's rights to vote, or the PTA, or even, if I understand right, in 1876, the first canning of sardines took place in Eastport, Maine. No, I'm sorry. I think of sardines as somewhere in Norway or somewhere. I didn't ever think of them as here locally, like, oh, yeah. And I'm not sure that that's still going
Nothing
on.
Nothing says
but...
American ingenuity. Like, let's take small fish and pack them in a can.
That, you know, this is the sort of thing. Or 1817, the first U.S. street lights were lit by gas in Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah,
you can actually go out at night with lights on the streets. That's a huge deal.
Huge thing. Oh my gosh. Well, we know it like when we have blackouts because of weather, and it's totally dark, and you suddenly get a whole new appreciation, like, how important that is.
Yep. Speaking with Scott Washington, we got time for one more. What do we got?
Okay.
Of all the dozens that exist.
We do. That's the thing. I kind of keep going. Oh, well, I think there is one that also happens this week, and that is Michael Jordan's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Happens this week. And
that's right. What day was that?
Also, the first student... let's see, I think...
February 17th is Michael Jordan's birthday.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, Hinton James?
Yes.
February 12th, 1795.
Oh, my gosh. The first student at UNC.
Yeah.
And it listed all these things that he was, like, president of. I thought, well, you're the only person there.
Won the student body president election by a vote of 1-0.
The graduating class was 7. So
it's also, like, the story of the founding of UNC is fascinating because we say 1789, 1793, but the student doesn't arrive until 1795.
Right.
So it was a university in name only for a couple of years there.
And part of that was also, and here I'll bring in an Orange County connection with this, in Hillsborough, there was a fellow from Scotland, James Hogg, H-O-G-G, but gets commonly known as James Hogg, who had business interests down what we call Fayetteville. It was called Cross Creek at the time. And he said when people were just trying to figure out where they're going to put this state university, he was a strong proponent for Chapel Hill.
Oh, interesting.
That's right. And Chapel Hill comes because there was a chapel here eventually at that time. So,
awesome.
Good things to know that people are doing good things. It's the other side of the news we hear, and we need to know that. It's important. But it's also important to know that in a nation of 300 million people, there have been so many people coming up with creative solutions. And everyone who's listening to this show, I think, knows that we're strong proponents in saying you can be that too.
History matters, as always. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.